in all. Listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up.
Sporty greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African football news. The Confederation of African Football, or CAF, is moving next March's Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches to October. CAF made the change to allow Africa's five World Cup-bound teams, Egypt, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunisia, to play friendly tune-up matches in March and get ready for Russia 2018. Reigning African champion Cameroon will host the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations. Previous editions of Africa's premier football tournament have been staged in January and February. But earlier this year, CAF's executive committee decided to move the competition to June and July for the first time. The 2019 edition in Cameroon will also be the first Africa Cup of Nations to feature 24 teams, an increase of 8 teams from the tournament held earlier this year in Gabon. In more African football news, the Egyptian Amir Fahmy has been appointed CAF's new Secretary General, following in the footsteps of his father and grandfather. The 34-year-old Fahmy replaces the Moroccan Hicham El Amrani, who resigned after CAF's longtime president, Issa Hayatou of Cameroon, was defeated by Ahmad of Madagascar in elections in March. I mentioned following in the footsteps. Well, Fahmy's grandfather, Murad, was CAF Secretary General from 1961 to 1982, and his father, Mustafa, held the position until 2010, when he was appointed FIFA's Director of Competitions. Before his appointment, Amir Fahmy worked on CAF's competitions team from 2007 to 2015. He'll be assisted in his new job by former Ghana international Tony Bafo, who has been appointed CAF's Deputy Secretary General in charge of development and competitions. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead on the show, I remember Muhammad Ali's longtime fight doctor. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Fernando Ferdy Pacheco, the ringside physician who died Thursday at age 89 in Miami, Florida. Nicknamed the Fight Doctor, Pacheco was Muhammad Ali's corner man from 1962 to 1977, a period that included all three of Ali's successful World Heavyweight Championship title belts. Pacheco said he left his ringside doctor position after suggesting Ali retire because of serious injuries. Muhammad Ali fought four more times, losing three of those bouts. Muhammad Ali died last year at age 74. Dr. Pacheco first met Ali in 1960 when he was introduced to him by Hall of Fame trainer Angelo Dundee. And I certainly have fond memories of Angelo, who delighted our many Voice of America listeners over the years with his funny verbal jabs and reminiscences about the fight game. Now, after his time with Muhammad Ali, Dr. Pacheco went on to become a television boxing analyst. Born in Tampa, Florida, the fight doctor received his medical degree from the University of Miami. Dr. Pacheco was also an award-winning artist, as well as the author of several books, plays, and screenplays. Dr. Ferdy Pacheco, the fight doctor, dead at age 89. Elsewhere in pro boxing, Ghanaian welterweight Dodzi Kema will be making his U.S. debut later Friday night when he fights for the lower-tier North American Boxing Organization title in Ontario, California, about 55 kilometers east of Los Angeles. For more details, let's go to Los Angeles and our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta.
Well, I had a chance of speaking with Alex Cote. Alex Cote is the manager of Dodzi Kema. They arrived in Los Angeles on Tuesday. They've been training, and they're getting ready to fight Giovanni Santillan. Giovanni Santillan is no easy fight, 22-0 with 12 KOs. But Dodzi Kema is 19-1 with 17 knockouts. But, Sonny, the question is, who has he been fighting? All these fights were in Africa. So he maybe have been fighting a whole bunch of cab drivers and weightlifters, you know. This fight will be later Friday night, Sonny. They're bringing the African to lose. The only way the African Dodzi Kema can win is by knocking out Giovanni Santillan. Mind you, Santillan is the draw here. He's a southpaw, so he can win an easy decision. Dodzi Kema must take it to Santillan, force the fight, and really destroy him. If it's a close fight, forget it, because the promoter and the referee and the judges will be in Santillan's corner. This is one of the fights I call the Mission Impossible fight, but the African, he can do it if he really, really wants it. My only concern is the opposition he faced in Africa coming into Los Angeles to take on a Mexican in his backyard. He must do two times more.
Another Ghanaian fighter, Isaac Dogbo, the Sunny Side of Sports Prospect of the Year for 2016. Also going to be back in the ring soon, Namdi. Tell our VOA boxing fans about that.
Royal Storm Sonny Dogbo, Sunny Side of Sports Prospect of the Year, has a world title fight January 6th in Accra, Ghana at the Bukom Arena. This is for the WBO Interim Junior Featherweight title. The current champion, Jesse Magdaleno, injured himself in training. And when the champion is injured, the organization sets up what we call interim fight. So the winner of this interim fight will take on the champion when the champion comes back from an injury. So here he's going to be taking on Mexican Cesar Juarez January 6th at the Bukom Arena. This is going to be an entertaining fight, and there's a good chance that homeboy from Accra, Ghana, Isaac Royal Storm Dogbo, will take the belt.
Any other updates involving African fighters, Namdi?
Yes. Isaac Ekpo from Nigeria, going for a rematch with Tyron Zouk. Tyron Zouk is from Germany. This will be their second time to fight. The first fight was stopped on court. This fight will happen in Germany, December 2. Isaac Ekpo has a good chance of winning this fight, because when the fight was stopped last time, the catch was very, very close. So going back to fight the champion, he must take it to him and win the title. And this is what the super middleweight WBA title, Sonny.
Namdi, let's move up to pro boxing's heavyweight division. Among the major sanctioning bodies, we currently have three undefeated champions. Anthony Joshua holds the IBF, the WBA, and the IBO title belts. Joseph Parker is the WBO champion, and Deontay Wilder is the WBC champ. Wilder posted his 39th consecutive victory November 4th when he knocked out the Haitian-Canadian Berman Stiverne in the first round in New York City. Namdi, did you learn anything about Wilder from that quick knockout?
Sonny, we did not learn anything from a one-round fight that ended with just one, the champion throwing wild blows and the contender did nothing. So we did not really learn, nothing to see, nothing to learn.
Stiverne did nothing. I watched the fight, Namdi. He looked fat. He looked out of shape. I don't even know if he threw a punch against Wilder.
He did not throw any punch. And not only that, the weigh-in was on Friday afternoon. He weighed 254 pounds Friday afternoon. So you know how heavyweights eat. They eat in bulk, man. So 254 at the weigh-in Friday, that means fight night, Saturday night, this cat will have come in close to 280 pounds. So how do you move? No way to move. So he will just... like a target practice. We have seen better fights in the gym than what we saw at Barclays Arena in New York City.
What did we learn in terms of the live gate and the TV ratings from that fight?
Sonny, you know, after every fight, especially a very important fight, we always go back and look at numbers. And when we look at numbers, we don't just look at the numbers the promoters throw out. The live gate was 11,000 people. In an arena that holds 17,000 people. When you say 11,000, then you have to ask how many paid to get in. It just shows that almost 3,300 were given away free, which means the house was papered, you know. In the U.S., this is the baddest all-American heavyweight. He cannot even fill up an arena of 17,000 people, and they had to paper the house.
What about the TV ratings?
Well, the TV ratings for Showtime in a one-round fight, it was only 874,000 eyeballs that came in to see the fight. So right there, he did less than a million, and the live gate was just so-so. It just proves that he still needs to do a lot to sell himself to the American boxing public.
After that quick victory, Namdi, Deontay Wilder called out Anthony Joshua, said he wanted to put him to the test. What are the chances of Wilder fighting Anthony Joshua in 2018?
Well, Sonny, I don't really think this fight will happen in 2018 because, one, Anthony Joshua is about to sign a multi-million dollar fight deal with HBO. His last fight was on Showtime. That's the end of the contract with Showtime. And Showtime owns Wilder. With HBO coming into the picture, it's not going to be easy for HBO and Showtime to break bread. And also, remember, Anthony Joshua and his promoter, Eddie Hearn, they're about to negotiate a new contract, you know. And Anthony Joshua can only fight three times a year. Right about now, when we look at it closely, he doesn't really need Deontay Wilder. You have Tyson Fury right there. You have Joseph Parker. Then you have the winner of Tony Bellew and David Haye. When you look at all this, the 2018 calendar is almost filled up. Nobody's breaking down the door for this fight to happen. This is not a mandatory fight. This card from America is not a draw.
Anthony Joshua, you mentioned that new contract, Namdi. Any other updates regarding AJ?
AJ will be heading to the motherland in December in Nigeria, and I think it's going to be a big deal because that would really help the sports of boxing. It's okay for sports officials from Nigeria to be at the arena watching fight, but, you know, they should look at developing the sports. We're football crazy. We don't look at other sports. Boxing did a lot for the country, Nigeria. I believe this visit to Nigeria in December will help the sports. And not only that, bring in bigger fights and the young fighters can see a champion that really controls the game. So it's a big thing for him coming into Nigeria.
I would imagine, Namdi, that AJ will receive a very warm welcome in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah. Son of the soil, Sonny. I mean, they watch him fight every time he's on TV. And his roots are still with Nigeria. So it's not like, you know, forget about what happened with me with the Nigerian Olympic teams and all that. No, but he's still a true Niger boy, like we say. And I think it's a big welcome for him. And in the future, you never know. We have the facilities. We just got to clean it up. We may see AJ doing it at Tafawa Balewa Square or at Abuja Stadium. And that's going to be a big boost for the sport of boxing in Nigeria.
Let's move to the WBO heavyweight champion, Namdi, Joseph Parker from New Zealand. Any updates on Parker?
Well, Sonny, Joseph Parker from New Zealand, they are negotiating now for a fight with Anthony Joshua. They are talking about March. But the question is, you know, I mean, who is Joseph Parker really? WBO belt, it doesn't really mean much. He once a breakdown of 60-40 for the negotiation. So like he wants 40% of the pay-per-view, 40% of the gate. He's not qualified. So Anthony Joshua and his team, they're offering him an 80-20 breakdown. So they're right now in the process of breaking bread. He can only make this money with Anthony Joshua. He cannot make it with Deontay Wilder. So at the end of the day, they will come back, offer him a little bit more money, and we'll look at that fight happening in the spring of 2018, which will be March or April.
Floyd Mayweather, one of boxing's top promoters, and another top promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, maybe following in Mayweather's footsteps, Nnamdi, by taking on a mixed martial artist. There are rumors that Oscar De La Hoya will go up against Conor McGregor. How about an update?
Sonny, people are making all this joke about this fight. Don't forget, Oscar De La Hoya was a global superstar. His fan base, the Mexicans, is still behind him. Based on the last fight with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, I don't count out Oscar De La Hoya knocking him out.
So you don't think he'll carry him like Mayweather did?
No, he'll press for the knockout from the beginning. I mean, if he press for the knockout and he's able to catch him, there's no need for the fight going six rounds. But, Sonny, don't forget, Oscar De La Hoya is like 44 years old. Conor is 28. De La Hoya's had issues with drug and alcohol. How about if he goes in there, press for the knockout in two, three rounds, and McGregor is able to escape? For me, it's a very interesting fight. Everybody thinks I'm crazy for saying, hey, they should fight. It will be a very entertaining fight. And with McGregor, he has this big fan base in MMA. And he will talk it up, and fans will come out. I will pay to see the fight. It's going to be a fun fight.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Just ahead on the program, the first sportswoman from Portugal to win Olympic gold receives a Lifetime Achievement Award. Olympic champion Rosa Mota of Portugal was recently honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award by AIMS, the Association of International Marathons and Distance Races. The 59-year-old Mota won the gold medal in the women's marathon at the 1988 Olympic Games in Seoul, South Korea. In addition, she won a bronze medal at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, as well as a world title in the women's marathon in 1987 in Rome. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Rosa Mota at the AIMS ceremony in Athens, Greece. Here's Andy.
35 years ago in Athens, Rosa Mota of Portugal won the first of three European Championship gold medals in the marathon. And here, 35 years later, she's winning the AIMS Lifetime Achievement Award. And in the last, almost four decades, Olympic title, World Championship title in the marathon. How does it feel, Rosa, to be back in Athens? I know it's not I don't think it's the first time since the European title, but how does that feel? And the AIMS Award as well.
Well, it's a big honor for me to receive this award. After 25 years, I stopped competing at the high level. And to be here in Athens is very, very good because everything starts here. And I say this is my Athens, and it's an honor to be here.
Have you been involved in running and athletics all your life? Obviously, this is a lifetime award, but I mean, once you stopped competing after winning the Olympic marathon in 88 and before that, the year before, the world title, and you're still the Portuguese record holder, how have you worked in athletics?
Well, first, I'm one of the vice presidents of the Portuguese Olympic Committee, and we work a lot. And for myself, I still run. I still do small races because I love running. I love sport, and I think it's very important sport for our life. And I try to introduce sport in the kids because we have a lot of kids with weight.
It's a common problem of people being obese in this world, in the Western world.
They want to be city, and I try to put them out to run, to walk, to play, because sport is so good for our life.
I think it's fair to say you were one of the standard bearers for women's running in particular. Of course, you won titles, global titles, but you showed that women could run. And when you look around you now, see so many women, mass runners as well, running. What are your thoughts? It was a very different time in the 70s and 80s, wasn't it?
Yes,
for you especially.
Yes, it was very difficult when I started running in Portugal. And now I'm so proud because a lot of women, they run, they walk, they are in sport. They can compete the same the men. I think we are in the right place in sport. And I hope we can get more and more women's, because sport is beautiful.
Rosa Motta, congratulations on the Ames Lifetime Achievement Award, and it's great to see you back in Athens.
Thank
you very much, Rosa.
Thank you. It was an honor. Thank you very much.
That's Rosa Motta, the 1988 Olympic champion in the women's marathon. And she was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards in Athens, Greece. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. If you go to my Facebook page on Friday, you'll see a wonderful photo by my producer this evening, Bill Werkinger, of myself, VOA colleague Andrew Palcheski, and Francis Tiafo, an up-and-coming American tennis star. Francis's parents are from Sierra Leone, and Bill captured us in studio. Andrew even brought along his Francis Tiafo bobblehead for the occasion. So check it out, that great photo. It's at my Facebook page, facebook.com/VOASunny. Now let's go to Boston, Massachusetts, where the National Basketball Association's longest current winning streak was extended to 14 games on Thursday night. In a marquee early season matchup, the Boston Celtics beat the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors 92-88. The Celtics rallied from a 17-point deficit to snap a 7-game winning streak by the Warriors. Star guard Kyrie Irving had 11 of his 16 points in the fourth quarter for the Celtics, including two clutch free throws that put Boston ahead in the closing seconds. Jaylen Brown had 22 points and 7 rebounds for the Celtics, while teammate Al Horford added 18 points and 11 rebounds. Kevin Durant led the Warriors with 24 points. In Thursday night's other NBA game, the Houston Rockets routed the Phoenix Suns 142-116. Star guard James Harden, still sporting my favorite beard in basketball, fired in 48 points for the Rockets. 33 of those points came in the first half. Once again, Houston 142, Phoenix 116. And that wraps up the November 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nelson Lopes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Disinformation is as old as the human race and has been used as a weapon since time immemorial. With the advent of the digital age came the capability to rapidly disseminate information and disinformation across the globe. Today we are encountering a global explosion of disinformation, propaganda, and lies fed by multiple authoritarian regimes and non-state actors like ISIS, said John Lansing, Chief Executive Officer and Director of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, or BBG, a United States government agency that is tasked with countering disinformation by setting the record straight through accurate factual journalism. Speaking before the Helsinki Commission, Mr. Lansing noted that Russia is one of the worst offenders. In Russia, the Kremlin propaganda machine is breathing new life into a strategy of disinformatsiya, or disinformation operations, to influence opinions about the United States and its allies and partners. Essentially, it's the weaponization of information. Russian disinformation campaigns do not attempt to sway listeners to the Russian point of view, as they had during the Cold War. Instead, the Russian strategy is to destroy the very idea of an objective, verifiable set of facts. In their world, the death of facts is the first step towards creating the alternative reality that helps them gain and keep authority with no accountability. If everything is a lie, then the biggest liar wins, said Mr. Lansing. The best way to counter disinformation is to expose the lies and to deliver uncensored, trustworthy information to audiences around the globe. For that reason, the BBG operates five networks: The Voice of America, Radio and TV Marti, Radio Free Asia, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, and the Middle East Broadcasting Networks, including Al Hura TV and Radio Sawa. They disseminate information across all platforms, from traditional radio and television to digital, mobile, and social networks. The BBG's mission is to inform, engage, and connect people around the world in support of freedom and democracy, said Director Lansing. Collectively, our programs reach 278 million people on a weekly basis in more than 100 countries and 61 languages. The BBG provides consistently accurate and compelling journalism that opens minds and stimulates debate. We demonstrate values that reflect our society: freedom, openness, democracy, and hope.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.